This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of September 4th, 2022. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 254. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. And on the big deal feature, I look back at the life of the late, great Patrick McGeer, scientist, politician, athlete, a British Columbian like no other. But first, is it just me? Is it just me, or were you surprised that both Hong Guo and Xinjiang were back in the news last week? The United Nations Human Rights Commissioner finally released her report on Xinjiang, concluding that China's treatment of Uyghur Muslims is wrong and could be a crime against humanity. In Richmond, BC, news that real estate and immigration lawyer Hong Guo has committed professional misconduct again. A Law Society of BC panel said in an August 24th ruling that Hong Guo's, quote, almost transactional explanation of who was or was not her client, when her obligations to clients began or ended, and her duties to former clients appeared to arise either from a total lack of knowledge of or a failure to comprehend the requirements of a lawyer's obligations and relationship to a client, end quote. The Law Society of BC has been uncovering scandal after scandal involving Hong Guo for years. She unsuccessfully ran for mayor of Richmond in 2018, the year she also spoke out in favor of Huawei's Meng Wanzhou. During her campaign, I sat down to interview Hong Guo and asked her about China's human rights record. She answered just the way someone who worked as a lawyer inside the Chinese Communist government would answer.
There's no human rights abuse in China.
Why is this relevant now? Because local government elections are coming across British Columbia on October 15th, and there is a renewed effort by people sympathetic with the Chinese Communist Party to gain influence inside your local city hall. At a time when China has cracked down on free speech in Hong Kong, and when China threatens to invade democratic country Taiwan, several politicians are seeking votes and donations from people who are loyal to a foreign dictatorship. Keep an eye on ABC Vancouver's Ken Sim and the NPA's Fred Harding. In Richmond, Mayor Malcolm Brody and Councillors Chak Ao and Alexa Liu have curried favor from people connected to the Chinese government. At a time when our own federal government, under the Trudeau Liberals, does not have a clear and coherent policy on how to deal with the biggest ally of Vladimir Putin, voters across BC need to know more about candidates in their communities and what they really represent. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. As I always say at the top of each podcast, The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. An influencer who knew the issues and left a huge legacy at the province's most important institutions passed away August 29th. His name was Patrick McGeer, and he was 95 years old. He was a doctor, a professor, a cabinet minister, and a basketball player who played for Canada at the London 1948 Olympics. Patrick McGeer excelled in everything he did. He was also an Order of Canada, an Order of BC recipient, a BC Sports Hall of Fame member, a world-renowned brain researcher who searched for a cure for Alzheimer's and Parkinson's diseases. Here is Pat McGeer from an October 2017 interview by John Stossel, who's the head of neurology at the University of British Columbia, during the International Parkinson and Movement Disorder Society Congress in Vancouver.
I was interested in basketball when I went to UBC, and I did chemistry because it was easy. Well, we had a good basketball team. We beat the Harlem Globetrotters. And if you look at me now, how could the guy this little ever play that game? But people have grown. They're taller now than they used to be. I'm not sure why, but the Knights of the Round Table, if you look at the armor, were little guys. And people are growing. Same genes, they're growing taller. Could be the diet. It could be elimination of a lot of childhood diseases, which may stunt growth. It might be both. Other things we don't yet know, but people are growing taller.
I don't quite know what my excuse will be, but I was aware of your rather distinguished history in basketball, and I think you've been a little bit modest in describing it. So you studied chemistry, and how did that get you into the brain and into neuroscience?
Well, there was no medical school here, so I went on to Princeton to take my PhD. And that's where I learned about science. It was an awesome place. Einstein was there.
Yes, of course.
He used to come and watch us play touch football. And Smythe was there. And all of the people who had known about atomic energy and the change in industry. And I was just overwhelmed by all of this. And that's when I became a committed scientist.
But that was in chemistry.
That was in chemistry, and then I went on to DuPont because DuPont was then hiring half of all PhDs in chemistry, saying that their growth was limited not by anything else but how many PhDs there were. So I went to work for DuPont in Wilmington. My supervisor was a guy named Al Gore. We worked on plastics, and Al thought it might be good to have fibers out of this. And they said, well, if you want to have fibers, go somewhere else. He started Gore-Tex.
I remember that as well, actually. But something else happened to you at DuPont. I think you met somebody else, didn't you?
My luckiest day. That's when I met Edie, who is my mentor and much better half.
And many people would agree with you on that. and that, of course, became a partnership that lasted for how many years now?
Well, we were married in 54, so we're still going strong. We go to work every day. No, it's not work, it's play. but we're doing science every day because it's fun.
Pat McGeer spent a quarter century in politics until 1986 and was one of Bill Bennett's social credit cabinet lieutenants. He was the MLA for Vancouver Point Grey from 1962 to 1986. He also led the BC Liberal Party from 1968 to 1972 before joining the Social Credit Party. McGeer followed his uncle Jerry's footsteps into politics. Jerry McGeer had been a member of parliament, a senator, and a mayor of Vancouver. Pat McGeer famously proposed a bridge between the Lower Mainland and Vancouver Island, something that BC Ferries passengers who were stuck in two or three sailing waits could use. He was also a booster of the wine industry and promoted protection for orca whales. Pat McGeer had plenty of opinions about the state of Vancouver and even offered a solution for the high cost of housing in his later years. Here he is speaking at the Rotary Club of Vancouver meeting in November 2018.
Now, what has caused property values to soar? Vancouver has become the money laundering capital of the world, at least of North America. Why? Because if you've made illicit money in China and you want to convert that illicit money into something of value, you buy real estate. That's the favorite method that people use for laundering their illicit money. Of course, once you do that, then you want to gain an advantage by flipping that asset to somebody else and making a profit. Okay, so what do you do to end that? Right now, the real estate transaction tax is a fraction of 1%. My proposal is that you increase that transaction tax from a fraction of 1% to 50%. So that if you try and flip a property that you acquired for $1 million, to flip it, it's going to cost you $500,000 to do that. That will make it very, very unattractive to try and flip property. What happens when you can't flip it? Oh, you go somewhere else to launder it. Once you take away the laundering, property values go down, home taxes go down, and people who have lived for generations in their own home can continue to do that. So what do you do with city council? You just say, get out of people's homes. End that bureaucracy. No more inspection. Let people do what they want as they always have done within their own home. Money laundering disappears. Property values go down. Much to the disappointment of the city government and the provincial government, but they just live with less income. If you want to do something and you don't have the income to do it, then you could do what Uncle Jerry did when he built City Hall. The depth of the Depression, everybody out of work, no money anywhere. Where was it? Well, it was in mattresses. So he said, okay, we'll build the city hall and I will issue baby bonds to cover the cost. Immediately the money came out from the people who had been hiding it. Built city hall in the depth of the Depression. Took people who were out of work, put them back to work, all because he made it possible to spend money.
Pat McGeer was one of Canada's best basketball players after World War II, leading the University of BC Thunderbirds to victories over college powerhouses and even the famed Harlem Globetrotters. Joining me to talk about McGeer's legacy in hoops is Jason Beck, the general manager of the British Columbia Sports Hall of Fame and Museum at BC Place Stadium. Tell me what you think about Pat McGeer and his contribution to sport here in British Columbia.
Yeah, thanks, Bob. I'm really glad you're focusing on Pat, because I really think he's a fascinating figure, not just as an athlete, but as you said, as a scientist and a politician. And you know, any one of those three aspects of his life, I think, and what he achieved in them would be you know, amazing. But collectively, he's got to be one of the more fascinating British Columbian figures of the past, you know, 50, 60, 70, 80 years. As an athlete, he was a very good athlete. I think his work as a scientist and a politician has kind of overshadowed that a bit. He was definitely one of BC's best basketball players of the 1940s, probably one of Canada's best players as well of that era. You mentioned that UBC team, the 45-46 UBC men's team, that team's inducted into our hall, into the BC Sports Hall of Fame. And you mentioned a couple of the players on the team, but that team is loaded with star guys. And Pat was probably the best player among them. You're talking multi-sport athletes like Sandy Robertson, who's in our Hall of Fame. You mentioned Reg Clarkson, who's in our hall as well as an individual. Bob Osborne was the coach, very good athlete himself, but others as well, like Richie Nickel and Hunk Henderson, Ralph Hunk Henderson, who's a recent inductee in our hall. So that Pat was kind of the scorer on that team. He was a high scoring forward. You mentioned the game where, and that's a very famous game where the UBC men beat the Harlem Globetrotters in a true game. Like, and this is at a time when when you were playing the Globetrotters, it actually was a real basketball game. There was no theatrics and the fun bits of the game that come with a game, with a Globetrotters game today. This is a true basketball game, and Globetrotters were a good team. UBC was one of the top teams in Canada at that time. In fact, at one point they were leading, in the game, by about like 15 or 20 points, and Harlem's manager, Abe Saperstein, kind of threatened fines apparently on some of his players if they didn't start playing, and they did close the gap, but UBC ended up winning 42-38. The leading scorer in that game was Pat McGeer, who had 14 points. Apparently War Memorial Gym at UBC for that game was just packed. I know there's one famous photo of students actually like standing in the overhead windows of War Memorial because they couldn't find a seat. And so it was just standing room only. Pat was also on that UBC team in 1947-48 that represented Canada at the Olympics. The bulk of that UBC team, and Canada finished ninth in men's basketball at the Olympics in London. And I've got a story about that. So in 2012, leading up to the 2012 Olympics in London, we were putting together an exhibit at the BC Sports Hall of Fame, looking back to the last time the Olympics were in London in 1948. And so I was trying to reach out to different athletes that were still with us and living locally, if they had any stories or photos or memorabilia from those games. One of them that I reached out to was Pat. And I had never met Pat, never spoken to him to that point, but we had a couple good conversations on the phone. And then he called and said, you know, after I'm done in the lab today, can I swing by the Hall of Fame? Because I found something for you for your exhibit. So I was really excited. So I stayed late at work, and he came by after closing, and I met him outside the hall. And he said, and he had this troubled look on his face. And I thought, well, I could tell something wasn't right. And I said, everything okay? And he says, well, I've got my jersey from my Canadian jersey from the 1948 Olympics. And he said, I hadn't looked at it, and he said probably 10 or 15 years. And I pulled it out today, and it was stained. And I said, well, that, you know, that's okay. You know, we'll display it as is. It's, you know, it was 60 plus years old at that time. So it's okay if it looks aged. And he said, no, it didn't feel right to me. So he said, I ran it through the wash today, and it was this nice white singlet with a red and white Canadian maple leaf crest on the center. And then it had these weird kind of like red and white stripes underneath the armpits that ran down the side of each side of the jersey. Anyhow, all the red in the jersey, the red ink ran. So the jersey basically became pink. And I guess I don't know if he bleached it or if, it sounded like this has been an entire ordeal trying to clean this jersey up because he'd promised it to us. Anyhow, he brings it down to me, he pulls it out, and he'd clearly done some work on it, kind of painting it to try to like get the crest red and the red areas and white and the white areas with paint. And it didn't look great, but it was his jersey from the 1948 Olympics, and we did put it on display, and I just thought it was kind of a funny little story.
What defined Pat McGeer in his success as a student athlete that then opened the door for him to go on to greater achievements later in life?
I do agree with you. You know, especially post-war, you know, any sport anywhere was hard hit in those kind of mid to late 1940 years. And that certainly was the case, men's basketball, in BC and Canada. You know, if you're playing on a team like he was, a university team, you just weren't traveling that much. You know, today university teams are traveling all across the country and playing and traveling to the US, and that just wasn't happening at that time. So a lot of UBC, like Pat's UBC teams, were mostly playing in the Pacific Northwest and playing University of Washington and Oregon and more local teams. And the thing with his teams is they were doing very well at that time, as you mentioned, off the top. What defined him, you know, I think you at that time, if you were an elite athlete, you know, you just didn't have the support that a lot of athletes had later on, whether it was financial support, whether it was, you know, support in terms of equipment, coaching, and even like the like other support in terms of like medical physiotherapy, it just didn't exist at that time. It was a very hard time for sport, because it was, you know, obviously we're coming out of a world war. There were other priorities, and there just wasn't the resources. So if you were to succeed, you really had to, you kind of had to make do with what you had. And I think that, you know, a lot of athletes from that era became successful in other areas because they just learned how to adapt and learned how to make do with less than maybe, you know, other generations like yours and mine have come later. We've probably had it easier. But I think you see a lot of these athletes, even, you know, his teammates, just that small sample size from that, some of those UBC teams, it's amazing how many of those guys and women in other sports became successful people, and not just in sport, but in politics and in other professions. I think, you know, sport in that era, you had to adapt, you had to, you know, really put the work in, and that would serve you well in any walk of life. And he's certainly a great example of that, because gosh, what he went on to do in politics and in science, it's unreal. He's such a fascinating figure in that sense.
That was my guest, Jason Beck, the general manager of the British Columbia Sports Hall of Fame and Museum at BC Place Stadium, joining me to talk about the legacy of Pat McGeer, politician, physician, scientist, and basketball star. News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. In the Taiwan news, President Tsai Ing-wen eyes Arizona as gateway for further Taiwan-U.S. semiconductor cooperation. President Tsai met with Arizona Governor Doug Ducey, who led a delegation to participate in the U.S. Business Day event on August 31st. Arizona is also about to set up a foreign trade office in Taiwan to accelerate economic and trade cooperation between the two sides. The president said Taiwan and the U.S. will work together to create a safer and more resilient supply chain and produce, quote-unquote, democratic chips. The two nations will also safeguard the interests of democratic allies and create greater prosperity. In Hong Kong Free Press, UN report on rights in Xinjiang finds China may have committed crimes against humanity. The report, which found that allegations of torture in the region were credible, was released just 13 minutes before the end of the four-year term of the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, Michelle Bachelet, expired. Quote, serious human rights violations have been committed in Xinjiang in the context of the government's application of counter-terrorism and counter-extremism strategies, the report said. The extent of arbitrary and discriminatory detention of members of Uyghur and other predominantly Muslim groups may constitute international crimes, in particular crimes against humanity, it added. In the Kyoto News, Japan, Taiwan to begin talks on evacuation plans amid China's threats. The agreement was reached when a delegation of Japanese lawmakers made a trip to Taiwan in August, weeks after U.S. Congress Speaker Nancy Pelosi, the third highest-ranking official of the U.S., visited the self-ruled island. More than 20,000 Japanese citizens live in Taiwan. Japan usually sends self-defense forces aircraft to evacuate its nationals in an emergency in another nation, but it is uncertain whether they can land on the island, which China claims as its territory. While private aircraft and ships could be used for evacuation before a Chinese invasion, comprehensive discussion about the issue has not been conducted between Japanese lawmakers and Taiwan's high-ranking officials.
That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In the Oregonian, can a horse sue for damages? Oregon appeals court rules nay. Only human beings and legally created entities are persons with the capacity to sue under Oregon common law, said the judge. The ruling is a blow to animal rights activists who have employed legal strategies for decades in hopes of granting animals the same entitlements as humans. In this case, Justice's lawyers sought at least $100,000 from his former owner, claiming she abandoned the American quarter horse to starve and freeze for months, leading to lifelong injuries that continue to require treatment. In King 5, WWU receives B Campus certification, pledges to protect pollinators. The certification will help pollinators by increasing the number of native plants, protecting nest sites, and limiting pesticides. Western Washington University in Bellingham runs a 5-acre farm surrounded by protected wetlands and is home to about 12 classes on year-round farm skills. They will offer the first course that is exclusively about beekeeping. It is estimated that honeybees help to produce about 1/3 of the food we consume. In Czech news, demand at Island Food Bank and affordable food programs surges as inflation grows. According to Nanaimo Foodshare, demand for its Good Box has gone up from 400 bags per month to upwards of 2,000 now, a 5-fold increase as inflation skyrockets. Meanwhile, Nanaimo's Loaves and Fishes Food Bank has seen an 11% increase in the number of children who are needing their services since 2019. That's Cascadia calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. It don't matter what color you are, 'cause love will conquer hate.
Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to Parkinson Society British Columbia and everyone who supports the annual Parkinson Superwalk fundraiser. September 10th and 11th in 20 communities throughout BC. Find out how you can help. Go to parkinson.bc.ca. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of September 4th, 2022. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 4th of September in 1972, American swimmer Mark Spitz became the first to win 7 medals at an Olympic Games? And The Price is Right, the new Price is Right, debuted on CBS, becoming the longest running game show by 2018.
The new Price is Right!
Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews. Happy Labor Day. Until next week.